Welcome to the New Mexico Financial Institutions Division's broadcast on financial education topics with leaders, advocates, and practitioners in our beautiful state of New Mexico. Our focus is on financial capability strategies at the state, tribal, community, and programmatic levels. This is your host, Vicki Oldman. I would like to introduce to you our guest, Jamie Glashe. She is Diné Navajo, also from White Mountain Apache and the Kiowa Native Nations. She has worked for her own tribe on the Navajo Nation, also was a loan officer with Axion New Mexico. Currently, she works with Roan Horse Consulting and is also a co-founder of Native Women Lead, an organization dedicated to supporting and growing Native American women entrepreneurs and leaders. Jamie also had the great opportunity to be on a national fellowship with Opportunity Finance Network, OFM, and currently serves on Governor Michelle Lujan Grisham's New Mexico 2020 Statewide Complete Count Commission. Jamie is definitely a busy woman. She's passionate, a collaborator for sure. And from what I know of her as I'm building a relationship with her, she's definitely very grounded in her culture and who she is. And she just exudes that. So I'm really excited that she's willing to be on this show. So welcome, Jamie.
Thank you so much.
Yes. Did you want to add anything to your introduction to let folks know who you are besides what I shared?
Yeah. Sure. Thank you. Yacht Ashe, Jamie Glashe, Yanisha, Makaiden, and Nishba, Sinodini, Rasiche, Zislagai, Bashishin. Hello. I am Jamie Glashe. I'm White Mountain Apache, Navajo, and Kiowa. I grew up on both the Navajo Nation and the White Mountain Apache Reservation most of my life and spent a lot of time here in Albuquerque in my formative years pursuing my education. I'm also part of Boston Impact Initiative cohort with my colleague Vanessa Roanhorse and our brother Edgar Villanueva. We're learning how to build a fund. So that's just a little bit extra. And I'm a mother of three and reside here in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Did I hear you correctly? Did you say Sinodini is your Che?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. We are sister. Well, I want to say sister, but I think because it's your Che, but Sinodini is my first clan. So we're related. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you're my grandmother or I'm your grandmother.
I think you're my grandma.
No. That's okay. I'll take the honor of being your grandmother.
Okay, auntie.
There we go. That's a little better. But technically, you're my grandma. I'm your grandmother by clan. So I say this. I want to put light on this. Yeah. So we're related in that way, in clan-wise. I say this for folks to know because in the work that we do in Native communities, you know, that's what's important is the connection and knowing how are we connected? And we use that to work with our people in the community, our relatives, our brothers and our sisters on the ground, because we want to know that history. It's important. And, you know, we're not going to go into Clan 101, but I want to put light on that as we do this work in the state of New Mexico on the ground, you know, within the tribe, within the state. You know, we're constantly building relationships, and that's what's important. So I just wanted to shed light on that. Because of your work, you know, yeah, absolutely. So I'm, you know, very just impressed with your work history and your connections and what you're doing. And you're, you know, as I had mentioned, you're definitely passionate about this work. What drives you to do this work? Because I know it's really been focused a lot of work on like access to credit and, you know, mm-hmm. helping families understand how to navigate that. And what drives you? Why is this work important?
First and foremost, it's love of my people, love of my family, my community, love of kin. I think that's the first thing. Mm-hmm. And also just having that experience of living on the res, growing up in poverty, not having financial literacy or education available to me to make decisions as I came through life. So I felt like I had to really learn as I failed. And, I think that there's a way to do this that, that helps people in their growth through their life, and that does this in a way that prepares them. Yeah, so I think love of community and understanding of that perspective.
Yes, thank you for that. Yeah, the love, and I appreciate you sharing a little bit about your own sort of journey, you know, so you understand what it's like to manage finances and trying to reach for more for the family. And, you know, and that I heard you say, like, you had to fall a couple of times and get back up. And so it was learning. What was a moment in your time when you were thinking about finances and where you realize this is what I got to learn and I got to figure this out? Where was that moment?
I think I had accumulated a lot of debt, and it was pretty overwhelming. This was probably in my younger years, after college, undergrad, and growing a family, you know, and moving, and just really trying to seek stability for my family, and realizing that I was barely treading water. I just felt like I was surviving. Living paycheck to paycheck, and just getting by, living in the city too. And also being the primary breadwinner in my family, multiple times in my life, that pressure and that stress of just making sure everybody eats and everybody has a roof over their head. You start to realize, you know, just the burden you carry in that way. But then also for me, I always felt like I have the ability, I have a sound mind, I have a working body. Like, I have those tools that I need. I'm open to learning. And so, yeah, I think it was just my formative years being in a lot of debt, trying to look at how do I pay this down. Also with stability for my family, I really wanted to buy a house, and having a lot of debt doesn't help when you're trying to go for a loan for a house. So I couldn't access that for the longest time.
Yes. Thank you so much for sharing that. It's true. You know, a lot of our relatives, people that I know as well, and strive for home ownership or even, you know, expanding their business. I know a lot of our native relatives are artists. They're business owners. They're hustling in their own way. And, you know, it's a dream. I know a lot of them dream about, you know, I know this could be something bigger, and it's hard to get, you know, access to that because of a lot of the things that you shared, like, you know, knowing how to manage your money, to manage debt, you know, to understand the whole credit system, you know, what does that all mean in sort of this economy, and then accessing it, you know, and there are different ways to access that. So your work with Roan Horse Consulting and also Native Women Lead, in both places, how are you all focusing and helping our Native relatives, consumers, brothers and sisters, to really understand the importance of sort of managing their resources so that they can meet the vision that they're hoping for?
Thank you. Yeah, our work is pretty diverse. I had started at Axion. I was fresh out of grad school. I was focused at grad school. In grad school was I got a master's in public administration, so really learning how to design programs that have impact. And then the focus was in the nonprofit sector, and I was really interested in that because it looked at a kind of a system or a way of approaching problem solving. So came out of grad school, started at Axion as a loan officer, really the only Native person there at the time. And the job was to essentially get loans out to Native communities. And I went in kind of, I was just like not familiar with the banking system. I was like, oh, this is like a bank, but it's not. It's also like a community. investing. So it was really neat to learn about the CDFI industry, community development financial institution, because it's really driven by access to capital for communities that might not have that access through like a bank or traditional financing. My goal there was to lend money to Native American entrepreneurs, and that's where I built out the Native American lending program there. And it required me to be on the ground and doing outreach and trying to connect with, you know, artists, entrepreneurs, Native people that needed funding support. But the opportunity I could offer was just a loan essentially, so that they can grow their business. And it was really interesting to work there because I thought, oh, I can go home and be like, hey, I have money to lend, you know, and it actually wasn't that easy. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't want to take a loan. They know that it's a risk that they're taking as well, you know, the financial responsibility of carrying that. And then in light of uncertain times and the economies, both on and off tribal nations, you know, I think there's a little bit of unknowing, but also a little bit of like not wanting to get into that. And I understand that because I grew up in a home where my grandma would pawn stuff sometimes, like her jewelry, just to make ends meet, go sell rugs when they needed food, you know, like, so we understand like how it is to survive. But then you add that financial as well, and that can be daunting.
Yeah.
Repeat or elaborate.
No, that's, I appreciate you sharing the experience mm-hmm. at Axion. It actually took me back to, there was a time I actually worked for a CDFI as well here in New Mexico. And it mm-hmm. same exact sort of like, what is this? What is this? What is mm-hmm. the CDFI, Community Development Financial Institution? It's a loan fund that is not a depository institution. It's not like a bank where you put money in, but mm-hmm. you can get loans. And anyway, when you were talking about that, my mind went to this time. We had this Native family, and we gave them a loan, and they paid every month. And it was interesting because we had to go back and collect because they, in their mind, they didn't really understand the full agreement. They just like, I borrowed $100, I'm giving you $100. And they were behind because they weren't paying the interest. And so mm-hmm. we had to break it. We went over there. I remember my colleague and I went there, and he was talking to them in Navajo. And I remember he was explaining and using different analogies about how this term came to be. And this is sort of like what, you know, when you get a loan or when you get a credit card or whatever, he's explaining it in Navajo. And then when the couple got it, they were like, oh, well, you know, we will pay for that. That's fine. We just didn't know. Like, we figured we borrowed this and we give that back, you know? And so that just, you know, again, shows like, you know, again, sort of breaking it down to making sure to explain it. And it may even mean you have to explain it in that language for folks to get it. Mm-hmm. Cause there's so much jargon in this, you know, in the work of finances. So yeah. it took me back to that, you know, something as simple as that.
It's definitely for me, even, you know, a learning curve. I think just building this fund, I'm really like learning these terms that I haven't been exposed to, because my family didn't have wealth. So I didn't know what equity was or these different types of legal structures or these different ways to raise money. You know, it's all been the past three years, it's been a huge learning curve for me. Mm-hmm. But I always come back to that love of my community and understanding of what that process is like to have to learn these things and how to move from survival to like thriving. So sorry, now I remember I setting the Axion context just to kind of share about what I have learned on the ground working with Native communities and trying to get people to get loans and doing the financial education. And then also the advocacy. The way the traditional banking system now, you know, people essentially assess the risk that they're willing to take as far as lending the money based on the five C's of credit. So I've had to do a lot of education. And at when I was working there, that's how we kind of positioned the loan application. So we had to answer those questions on behalf of the potential borrower in order to get approval to give them the loan. So a lot of, I think, my education when I was working with communities at Acción was really explaining how I was seeing it. You know, like, we have to look at your credit. Like, there's a minimum credit score you have to meet. You look at your character. Is this person going to pay back the loan? What do they demonstrate personally? Are they calling you back? Are they responsible? I'm trying to answer those questions as best as we could. And then collateral. Do they have collateral? Can they promise? Can they use something to promise they'll pay back the loan, as, you know, as a promise to pay back? And that's really hard, actually, in on tribal lands, on reservation communities, because people can't use their collateral to promise anything, because in tribal lands, people don't own the land. And then a lot of banks won't do business in tribal communities because they can't get collateral. They can't access those assets in case somebody does not pay back the loan. So really trying to, one, tell my community, I've been there. I know the journey, and I know the kind of concerns about getting a loan. I also see how it benefits in allowing you to expand your business and most of the applicants there, they're just like everybody else that's trying to grow their business or start a business. They need supplies. They need to pay somebody. They need, my cheek's probably hitting the button. They need to pay for space. They, need tools and equipment and all of that. So that's kind of my first step into the financial world. And then fast forward a couple of years later, I'm working on Native Women Lead efforts. And I was actually still at Acción. I'm sorry, give me 1 second. Okay. I just stopped that. While I was working at Acción, I had met my boss, Vanessa Roanhorse, who was also working on the effort with the city for providing access to lending dollars for the businesses along Central Avenue that were potentially affected by the expansion of the Albuquerque Rapid Transit. So we met and we were talking, and we did the same thing, client introductions, and she was just very candid about, what are Native entrepreneurs experiencing? And I shared with her exactly what I shared now and how I approach it. And so it was cool. We kept in communication, and she invited me. She's like, hey, we're having just a circle of Native women just to talk, just to grow a community and connect. And she's like, come over. So I met them, I think, after work at New Mexico Community Capital, which is another CDFI, a Native-led, Native-serving organization that provides technical assistance. And I was there with a bunch of women that I knew about, but I didn't really know personally. I was actually kind of fangirling because there was a couple of women there that I follow on social media that I was like, wow, I get to like meet them in person. Just awesome Indigenous women. And then just kept going there to that circle to that space, because it just felt so nurturing. It felt like, hey, like, there's women out there that look like me that are experiencing the same thing. And a lot of these women were business owners. So I remember coming in very early and like, hi, I'm Jamie. I'm a loan officer. If anybody needs loans or support with that, totally here to help. And and it's funny because that actually, I think my experience at Acción at the time really informed a lot of how we develop Native Women Lead, the perspectives of the co-founders there, of being entrepreneurs, knowing how lonely that journey is, and knowing, all the challenges and barriers that they had to get through to get where they were. So it was a really beautiful synergy. Came up with our core values, and really the question was, who are we? We're Native women, we're entrepreneurs and leaders, and what makes us different? And that's how we actually formed our core values. And then as we continue to grow, we took those core values and we did research. And there's not a lot of data of Native women, but we did research on ourselves, essentially on our community, and that's where we learned why this was so compelling and so important. We knew from experience, but we didn't know, like, from the the 30,000 foot, how that affects everything in our community. So I think the big goal is closing the racial wealth gap within Native communities, Native women. I'm leading that.
I love that. So you said so much in that time. So thank you. No, it's great. In that, you know, it knowing that there's, I want to say different lens, I guess, you know, like there's the lens of sort of the market Western economy of traditional lending, you know, and you shared with our listeners sort of the five C's, you know, the credit, character, collateral, capacity, and, you know, conditions that a lender looks at. They go through that, and, you know, and that's how they determine if you, how much you're eligible for, if, you know, if you want to get lending. And I actually was, I want to go and, so you said that, but you also just sort of mentioned this beautiful resource of Native Women Lead and the focus and the mission and the vision that they have for Native entrepreneurs and women as well, you know, specifically, and really starting to build relationships, and that there are resources out here for our folks to be aware of. There are resources here, and you need a blend. I feel like there's a blending that needs to happen. You know, there's that cultural context, the relational, and knowing that there are other you know, resources that are Native centric and, you know, understand sort of the culture and can help you navigate towards your vision, you know, going through classes, financial education classes, learning how to be a business owner, understanding and how to prepare for, you know, access to credit. So there's that, that's that. But I'm also curious about, because you've been working in that field, you know, in the CDFI world and understand different institutions and accessing credit, what's shifting now and how our relatives need to be aware? Like, what are their ways for them to access credit? You know, there's CDFIs, clearly. There's financial institutions. What are other ways for them to be thinking about, you know, accessing credit for their vision?
Oh, I think first and foremost, what I'm learning here as I'm working through this evolution of my career and the work that I do is the abundance mindset is so crucial. Like you said before, there's tons of resources. There's lots of folks that provide technical assistance, lots of folks that are, and even from the lender perspective, there's a lot of money. There's money to be lent, and a lot of organizations and banks, and they want to lend money to Native people because that's part of the social impact work that some organizations and institutions actually do care about. But they're also constrained within their framework. But there is evolving and alternative lending models that are coming out. Like, for example, Roanhorse, we work with New Sunday Credit Union, and Native Women Lead just piloted Co-op Capital, which is actually very opposite of the traditional banking five C's of credit. It actually doesn't take any of that into account. It takes in character. So we actually are testing a relationship-based lending model and just lent $150,000 to our community, inclusive of 36 entrepreneurs, and really testing the relationship-based lending model to demonstrate that there's other ways. And there's all these community funds that are becoming available. And I think in light of COVID, there's a huge shift. And I think that mentality of abundance is definitely needed, because those resources are there. And I would just really encourage people to learn about all of those things and use all of those things. You know, access all of those things and know that you deserve access to all of that. There's a big history of exclusionary practices that have kept Indigenous people, Black people, people of color in general, out of traditional financing systems. And now I think, in light of what's shifting in the world and what's changing, is these inequities are being exacerbated and shown, is that there is a movement to really transform finance. And so I'm excited about that. I also know, you know, it takes time to shake, to change and move. And the data that we've learned from Native Women Lead, just from talking to our community, is people need like $50,000-$60,000 just to get their business up and going. And they need to pay living wages. They want to pay living wages. And a lot of our community are social entrepreneurs. They're trying to solve problems. And for example, within the Native Women Lead work, you know, most of the entrepreneurs there, they do it because they love their community. They have a passion. They have a skill set they can offer. And they want to do social good. They want to do good. So I think that's one thing that's really unique about Indigenous entrepreneurship and business, is that we take into account love of people, community, culture, and that's the motivation that drives us. It's not because we want to be wealthy and, you know, be the CEO of everything. No, we actually want to fix things in our community and make sure people are fed and cared for. And that's a really compelling, I think, thing about Indigenous entrepreneurship now, and as people access capital, is really sharing that story and telling their why as to why they're starting their business. That actually helped me advocate a lot for businesses when I worked at Axion, even when I was also saying, like, it's a credit score, you know, and there's no collateral. That's the compelling part of it all.
Yes, I love what you're saying. What I'm gathering from the last sort of comment is, you know, we as Native communities and families, we're very value-centered focus. You know, it's like, as you had said, it's not about the money. It's not about the wealth. You know, it's not about accumulation. It's about the values of sharing, generosity, you know, staying grounded to who we are with our ancestors. And, you know, we want to be able to get the resources so we're able to continue to build on what has kept us grounded, you know. And if that's simply a home, right, creating your art, you know, because that is all very spiritual as well. Our home is very spiritual. So it's very value-centered. And you know, and for the other things that I really appreciate you sharing is that, you know, telling our listeners, you know, take advantage of these resources. There are tons of resources out there, you know, for education on your finances, for technical assistance. So that's one-on-one, helping you to kind of think through and create a plan, whatever that plan is. But there's advantages of taking those resources, they're there for you, use them. And the other thing that I really appreciate you saying is sort of like this mindset of abundance. You know, when you think about our traditional kind of core values, we've never really thought about scarcity. We just knew that, you know, there are resources all around and it's going to provide for us. I think what shifted is, you know, there's an era in history where we resources were removed from us, and you know, then scarcity set in. And so this mindset of abundance is what I wanted to put light on. And then also you thinking about, or just letting our listeners know, like, it's going to take time. So there are different things that you're mentioning, like, you know, what are we going to do to transform finance, access to credit, right? It's going to take some time. But I also think that message in terms of taking time for change and move is applicable to each of us as individuals. So if you're wanting to fix your finances, you know, improve your credit and get out of debt, it's going to take time to do that. And it's worth it in the end, because then you're able to move, you know, because hearing your story, I could hear it in your voice about, like, it was heavy. Like, I had a lot of debt. It was like paycheck to paycheck, and then it's heavy. And so it's going to take time to do that. And I am really excited about hearing this alternative lending approach and not necessarily looking at the five C's, but looking at it more of a relational base model. I think that's beautiful because that is what we're all about. So I'm really excited about how that's working, and maybe we'll have you guys come back and after you've piloted and tested to share about it and let folks know what that looks like. I think that's super exciting. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I also want to just underscore real quick, you know, what we shared about what we just talked about is that is real, like the trauma, the history, how that affected access to credit in Native communities. Like that's all, you know, real and felt and experienced. A lot of the work that we do with Native Women Lead is one is we're trying to demonstrate that Indigenous women are worthy completely of investment in their businesses because they are the caretakers. So a lot of the BWE values that we hold, we're the backbone of community, we're emerging as entrepreneurs, we're weaving all of what we know, our culture, identity, resources to manifest change and empower one another. But the reality that we face is we're very invisible. So we represent less than 1% of the population. So a lot of times people don't know about us. And that's why it's important to center ourselves and uplift each other. We're only paid 58 cents to the dollar, so there's a huge wage inequity. And 1 in 3 of us will experience violence in our lifetime. So those are, you know, 3 real issues that affect us as we grow, as we try to begin a business or try to build assets or just seek economic security. Those things affect us in very real ways. But we also have an opportunity to address that. Because 2/3 of us are the breadwinners in our communities and our families, like we're the ones essentially pushing our economies, whether they're off or on tribal nations, forward. And we're the ones taking care of the children and generations to come. But we're also growing businesses twice as fast as anybody else, as any other demographic. And that's really, I think, an opportunity to reclaim ourselves as far as our Indigenous entrepreneurial spirit, because we've always been that for thousands and thousands of years. But we already know how to do regenerative economies, sustainable economies. Our people have known that through thousands of years of trade and barter systems. But we also have a social responsibility at this time to make sure that that Indigenous perspective is shared with the world, because you see how detrimental capitalism has been. And then as matriarchs, you know, like that's something else. Like, how do you care for community and take an approach that ensures wealth for everybody, abundance for everybody, and not wealth in the financial terms, but wealth in access to clean water, to healthy ecosystems, to family, to ceremony, to prayer, to language. So that's ultimately our why. And I know that we can do it. I know that we are incredibly smart and intelligent, capable people. And it's learning all of it. It's learning all of it.
I agree. I think we are doing it. I totally agree with that. And I think there's a lot more work that needs to happen. And I just am really just honored and excited and just looking forward to seeing more of what Native Women Lead is doing. And also the work and really trying to shift sort of the system in access to credit. I want to just thank you so much, Damie, for being on here and shedding light and sharing your story and also letting folks know. Like, I feel like your story has been inspirational and letting folks know, like, you can do it. You know, they're resources. It's about connecting to the right individual. And I love the reclaiming, you know, reclaiming who we are and that we are resilient. You know, we are strong. It's in it's in our genes. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. So, but thank you so much. And I wanted to just offer for you before you sign off, any final words to our listeners before you sign off?
Thank you. I really appreciated being here in this space. I would just say I know it's incredibly hard right now and incredibly stressful, but there's a community out there. There are people out there that look like you, that understand you, that understand how hard this all is. And I would just say to be compassionate with yourself. And I know things feel urgent and things feel like they're accelerating, but take some time to just honor yourself and take care of yourself. And if that means connecting to friends or family, you know, definitely do that. And I know that there is a community out there that is really trying to support the health and well-being of our people, and that we should just continue to center ourselves in a good way. You know, I think there's so much work that needs to be done, like you said, but it's okay. And access to capital, it's going to be a long-standing issue that we're going to have to solve, but we can do it, and we can show how to do it better. Thank you.
Thank you so much. For more information or questions about today's topic, contact Roan Horse Consulting and our Native Woman Lead at 505-216-6040. This is your host, Vicki Oldman, Ayahat. Thank you for joining us.